Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Coming up on this edition of the TV Black Box 101 podcast, it's all about celebrating the return of the Rafters. Amazon Prime Video will be streaming 6 brand new episodes of Back to the Rafters. In a one-on-one first, I have 2 guests. First, Bevan Lee, creator and writer, and then Eric Thompson, who plays one of Australia's favourite dads, Dave Rafter. They are both standing by.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is TV Black Box, bringing you the inside goss from the TV industry.
Hello, gorgeous people, and welcome to another one-on-one podcast with TV Black Box. I'm Aaron Ryan. In this edition, we are celebrating the return of the Rafters with Amazon Prime Video releasing a brand new 6-episode season, Back to the Rafters, which drops on September 17th with all 6 episodes. In a different format for the podcast, we have 2 guests for this edition. First, we'll chat to creator and writer Bevan Lee, and then standing by is Dave Rafter himself, Eric Thompson. I did speak to Bevan last year for a full 1-hour podcast about his career. It's well worth a listen. So returning once again is Bevan Lee. Welcome back, Bevan.
Oh, call me the ubiquitous Bevan Lee, but there you go.
I've watched the first 3 episodes of Back to the Rafters, and at first impression, I can say that it does not skip a beat at all. It's like the show never left us. It had everything the original had in it. From a viewer point of view, it seemed that the writing was an easy flow from the original. How easy or difficult was it to jump back in?
It's a bit like when you go to Cirque du Soleil and one of those people gets up there and does the extraordinary doubles, triple back somersault, forward flip, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you go, well, you know, and that's clever, but it looks so easy. Same thing. It was staggeringly difficult, you know, to work out the way forward, to create a show that was 6 hours long, that had a reason for being, that was valid for the world as it is now, as distinct from the world as it was when Rafters left us. And it has changed a lot in those 7 odd years. That had a reason for being other than going, let's go back and see the Rafters again. So I'm glad that you have found it so. And it warms my heart because I know that the extraordinary hard work that myself and the writers and my co-assistant in the writing department, Catherine Thompson, and then Chris Martin Jones, a producer, and all the directors and actors, that all the work we did has paid off and make it look like that. Yeah. So in short, it was ruddy hard.
Well, I was absolutely crying in the first episode. You really find the balance between, I guess, trivial family matters and then complete tragedy. Just so much heart for the viewer to relate to in terms of how Australian families operate. How do you strike the balance between being real, but also, you know, the soap element as well, for a better word?
Well, yeah, the human drama element. Just with... That is the skill that the show is working out. I often use the metaphor for the show that it's a big stick of candy floss with a dollop of lemon juice in the center. And if you take away the candy floss, you'll wince with the sourness. And if you take away the lemon juice, you'll throw up from the sweetness. And it's getting the balance right. And that is the... Because overall with the show, we've always got the balance right, it sort of looks like an easy thing to do, but getting it right takes a lot of trial and error and questioning ourselves, and because we do deal with some quite serious issues in the show, in both Pack to the Rafters and Back to the Rafters. So the dilemma you have is how to deal with these serious issues and yet have an optimistic and light show, so that when you go optimistic and light, you don't look like you're trivializing the serious issues you're dealing with. Or when you go into the serious issues, you don't become turgid and gloomy and make the people who've come to the show for a bit of a laugh turn off. So, yes, it is. It is. It's something that I'm quite good at organically as a creator. So it comes easier to me, I think, than some people. But I know some people have come under the show and tried to write it, and they simply haven't been able to get it. Because it is very, very, the tolerances within which you can fall to get it right are extremely narrow. So I'm glad you feel that we've succeeded with this. I personally, he says arrogantly, think we have. I feel very proud. I feel very proud of it. I think we've really hit the mark with the show. But I think, and I don't know if you feel it from the first three episodes, I think we have not, it's the same show, but it's different. I think that we are dealing with some stuff within the show that we probably wouldn't have dealt with, you know, back 6 years before. Certainly in terms of where Dave and Julie's marriage is at. It does seem to me to be not just a revisiting, but an extension forward. And that's what I think Amazon wanted when they, and that's what I wanted to do. I didn't see the point of going back into the world of the show unless we could say something more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You used to like obviously writing for 22 episodes of Rafters, except for the final season. This season with Amazon is just 6 episodes. Is there an overall theme for the 6 episodes? So how are we going into this new season? What should we expect in terms of a theme?
I think the theme, especially to the that you can love each other, but love can sometimes possibly mean not being together. And I wasn't necessarily, when I was approached to do it, that sure as to whether I wanted to revisit the world of the Rafters. Because to me it was closed business. But I got my enthusiasm again when I sort of went into my own life and thought about what had happened with the major relationship in my life, which had fallen apart on the basis of two people who truly still loved each other, but life had brought them to a place where to go forward together, one of you would have to be untrue to yourself. What we wanted out of life had become so different that to proceed forward together, one of us would have to compromise ourselves and what we were getting from life. And that's sort of really what the story is with Dave and Julie, you know, I mean, where they find themselves in that position. And it's a really interesting, I don't know if you found it, you know, moving. I think some people will find it quite confronting that the seemingly perfect couple, but there's no such thing as a seemingly perfect couple. For, you know, to me, what I found interesting was if we don't challenge the Dave and Julie-ness of Dave and Julie and have them deal with issues and find their way, you know, through with the family around them reacting to what's going on, then I think we sort of limit them so much as people, because every couple, no matter how perfect, have issues that they have to face, especially as the marriage goes on longer and longer. And I fell in love with exploring for myself that thing that I'd been through and transmuting it into the Rafters. And I feel it's presents a really different storyline, one we wouldn't have done with them back in the Pack to the Rafters incarnation. And I think the audience are going to be very excited by, moved by, challenged by, and ultimately warmed by the journey that the 6 hours goes. Because the show, if nothing, is an optimistic examination of life.
I didn't know if this was deliberate or this is something that was brought into the show, but I did notice that Julie Rafter, Rebecca Gibney, did the voiceover for the first episode, Dave for the second, and Rachel for the third episode.
The way with the show. That was always the way with the show. Every episode was narrated by a different family member every week.
But were the episodes more centric to that character that was doing the voiceover in more so in Back to the Rafters than it was in Back to the Rafters? I just noticed that when Rachel did her episode, it was very Rachel-heavy episode.
Oh, yeah. Look, I mean, and I think that's to do with the fact that it is a six-hour piece. When you do a six-hour piece, you have to distill the drama down. You can't have entertaining dead air. You don't have the time to have entertaining dead air if you're going to tell a really valid story over 6 hours. So I think it's exactly the same thing, but I think it just probably didn't pop as much back in the Pact the Rafters incarnation because that was more a dramatic stroll through a landscape, whereas when you've got a six-hour story to tell, you take a more, I think, probably determined walk through the landscape of your storytelling. So that probably comes just from the fact that we are distilling, you know, the narrative down into the, the liqueur of, a very, very tight 6 hour piece. Whereas I would say, you know, Pact to the Rafters was drinking a nice claret, whereas Back to the Rafters is drinking a finely distilled liqueur, because everything's tight, has to be. Otherwise, you know, the amount of story that we squeeze into the 6 hours, the only way you can actually, you know, it's a big story, especially because it spans, you know, you not only have Dave and Julie's story, but you've got Ben and Cassie's, that's Ben's wife, played by the lovely Hey Halee. And then you've got Ruby's story, that's a 10-year-old daughter. And then you've got Nathan's story, and then you've got Rachel's story, and then you've got Ted's story. So you've got all of these separate areas which all feed into the central situation with Dave and Julie. But when you, and then of course you've got your comic zanies, I don't want to put them down by saying that, but you know, Donna and Carbo are the ones who come in with the more, you know, wide-eyed, you know, like the popular mechanicals of Shakespearean plays. And so when you've got all that to squeeze in, and it's only 6 hours, and you've got to go a true narrative and character journey for every character, because no character is the same at the end of that 6 hours. They've all changed by the end of that 6 hours. That's the other difference, I think, with the 6 hour miniseries piece. With Rafters, it tended to go from week to week, and they would have their various dilemmas, but their morphing as characters, I think, was probably a longer, slow burn element of the Pact to the Rafters series.
Can we get a
doing
bit of
the 6 hours? You know, they just doing the 6 hours. All of them have changed very strongly by the end of that 6 hours.
I just wanted to ask about some of these key characters, Bevan, for this new season. I guess without giving too many spoilers. So where we left the season final with Pack to the Rafters, Dave and Julie sold up their home at the end of season six and travelled to Australia with daughter Ruby. Where are they now as this new season begins?
They've settled in a country town. They've found a life in a country town. And one of the, once again without spoilers, one of the dilemmas that arises is, you know, whether you form a life away from the center of where the rest of your family is. And I won't go into any more detail than that. It's like, you know, how intertwined do you have to be a good family, and how much have you drifted as a family if you have let those bonds fray too much from distance? So they've found you know, great contentment and happiness in this country town. And then I won't go into the details of what happens, but there is a MacGuffin that kicks the plot off around their daughter Ruby, and that sort of leads things. Played extraordinarily well by a young actress, Willow, who's quite an extraordinary young performer for her age, and it sets the show going.
So let's move on to Nathan. Saskia left to move overseas, so Nathan became a full-time parent to Edward. Although Nathan was now just friends with Sammy, there did seem the possibility of some romance again with Sammy. So where is Nathan?
Yeah, look,
now?
can we stop? Yeah, let's stop the questions right there from this point of view, that you are going back to Pack to the Rafters. Our lives change, and just so you know, and I'm not trying to be rude to you in your questions, but I just think they're moot questions from the point of view that when you come in to do Back to the Rafters, it's a whole new entity. It's not a revisiting. It's a reboot, and we don't deny the continuity, but we're taking these people's lives 6 years down the track, and we're starting a really interesting and new piece, and we've only got 6 hours to tell the story. And, you know, if we had this huge dilemma in the first hour of how much to back reference and explain away all those things. But you meet somebody 6 years down the track in their life, and, you know, like, for example, we don't pick up Rachel and Jake. Rachel and Jake clearly haven't worked out. She's a very driven career woman in New York when we pick her up, and there's a reference to them having not worked out, especially too because this is going overseas and there'll be international viewers who've probably never even seen Pack to the Rafters. And also people are coming to it who forgot, you know, who might be new in Australia to watch it and coming back. But to take time on a landscape to over-explore explaining the gaps of where characters are that you never even see. The characters we see, it's very clearly explained. And so you just pick it up and you go, well, if Nathan's not with Sammy, then it didn't work out. There is a reference to Jake and Rachel not working out. But it becomes quite clear when you see the way Rachel is in her life, this incredibly driven career woman. If you look back and you think about the guy who was Jake, he wouldn't, that marriage, that, you know, that relationship wouldn't have survived. There's no question that he would have died. So we felt that it was best, rather than, you know, having new viewers going, who the hell are they talking about? Now, if Jake had been in it, and if we'd picked Jake up three episodes down, then we would have prepared the audience for that. But there were reasons, you know. Jimmy, for example, who played Jake, is a regular on Home and Away, and we couldn't get him. Yeah. You know, Ryan Corr is a very busy young actor, and we didn't want to pepper the landscape with too many characters, you know, where you've only got 6 hours and you've already got, you know, you have to find room in the lives of the ones, you know, had to find a wife for Ben. There's another character. Willow, Ruby is now a fully functioning character, and Edward, the young son of Nathan, fully functioning character. You had to find characters in the country to show that Dave and Julie had found a life in the country. So we got Pado, Dave's mate, played by lovely Erin McGrath, and Tessa, played by Libby Tanner. So you put those characters in. Suddenly, you suddenly start to, if you think about bringing back in too many of the old, what I would call satellite characters, you end up with narrative spaghetti. So having made that decision, you just go, okay, well, we're not going to have that one. And having decided not to have them, you just go, you know, well, you come back into somebody's life 6 years later and they're not talking about their ex-partner, you go, oh, well, they must have broken up. You get what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
And so there is no discontinuity in there at all. It's just that the characters, you know, we were interested in telling a story about the fact that, as is happening with a number of men, you know, what happens for a man when he approaches 30 as a single father, and it's his life not coming together, put him together with Sammy in a romance, you don't have that story to tell. Make Rachel with Jake, even if we could have had Jimmy, you wouldn't have the story to tell of her story about what sacrifices must a driven career woman make to have her career, and how does her family feel about what they feel she's missing out on in life. So I didn't mean to be rude in cutting you off there, but you could have gone on, you know, we could have gone on, we didn't have this one, this one, this one, this one. But it's not a continuation of Pat to the Rafters. It's a story about the life of the Rafters 6 years later. And I think the audience, like a suspension of disbelief or a journey of a leap of faith, they have to go, oh, well, this is where they are now. These are their new friends. I mean, God, in the last 6 years, I had people who were I was intimately close with 6 years ago that I never even think of now, or, you know, may vaguely come up. So that's what we've done. And I think it's true to life in doing that. But it's also what came with the pragmatism of who we could or couldn't get on the landscape, and not wanting too many characters peppering the landscape that you simply can't service because you don't have the space in that 6 hours to service their story. So does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, it's actually a really good answer, because the people that are listening to the podcast that know Pack to the Rafters, I've watched some of the episodes and it is quite organic how the characters have moved on. Some people are together, some people aren't. So it does just answer the question, though, the overall question of maybe what has happened to some of those characters and stuff like that. So some people do like to tie up the loose ends, and I think you did that with that question. But it does play out quite organically because, as you say, 6 years has passed and people are up to different parts in their life.
Plus Dave and Julie went on the road in their van. They've been away for 6 years. They've lived on the road in their van for 6 years, topped home every now and then to see the kids or to, you know, visit Ted and check up on Ted, and then gone back on the road again. They end up in a country town. So I think the question might have been less moot if they had stayed in their house in the burbs and had the same life. But they had a radical life change, and you know, God, I came over here from Perth in 79, a year after I'd been here. You know what I mean? The people from Perth in my past were in my past, even though I'd been intimate friends with them. You just, your connections fray organically. So, but, you know, there were pragmatic reasons too. You just can't squeeze too many characters into 6 hours of television and not end up with a gobbledygooky narrative. It's it becomes too fractured. Well, but we've got all the old favourites there, you know?
Yeah, one of the big changes, though, of course, with Rachel is the actress change. Jessica is now Georgina is the new Jessica. Are you happy with how that played out with changing the actress?
Oh, Georgina's marvellous. Of course, it would be lovely to have had Jess there, but, you know, it was not right for Jess at that particular point in her life to be committing to the show. So we were in a dilemma. We sort of said to ourselves, do we have Rachel or don't we, given the fact that, you know, it was clearly not the right decision for Jess to be with us. And we really felt that the mother-daughter bond was so important that we couldn't see it proceeding forth without the character. And then Georgina came in and she's done a marvellous job, really, really marvellous job. And, in terms of recasts, I think it's been a very, very, personally, I think it's been a very, very successful recast.
I was just wondering what your thoughts, generally speaking, are on recasts. I mean, I remember the big one was Pippa in Home and Away, who was Vanessa Downing and then became Deborah Lawrence. I remember when I watched at the time, I was outraged. You know, I thought, this is never going to work. I can't get used to this. But now, you know, years later, the only Pippa that you think of is the second Pippa, which was Deborah Lawrence. I mean, you got used to it after a while. What's your general thoughts about, you know, the good old character recast?
Look, you know, if the character is essential to the piece, okay, let's put it this way. If somebody says, I love the show, and then watch Backs to the Rafters and takes attitude because Georgina's in there playing Rachel, then I question their love of the show. Because if you love the show, you know that we're not going to do that perversely. And so you just go with the flow. And you go, and then you come in and you see a lovely performance and you see a good story and you follow it. And it's good. I mean, I'm a great believer in recasts are fantastic. And I think as long as they're well done, they make great sense, because the only other choice if you don't recast is to lose the character. And I think that can damage the fabric of a show. I don't think our 6 hours would have be as good as they are if we had gone, we don't want to recast and written out the character of Rachel and had a show without Rachel. I think that show would be a lesser show than any, you know, big, and I think that the show's fantastic. And as long as the audience comes in and they go, well, that's what was necessary to do to keep the character of Rachel in the show. Georgina's performance is lovely. The storytelling is good. And it's just taking, well, you know, take the time to adjust. And I think they will, you know, because Georgina's performance is so lovely. We really were very lucky to find her.
Two other characters, and this is not a spoiler, but I will tell listeners that the writing for Michael Caton playing Ted and his acting playing a grandparent with dementia is beautifully heartbreaking. Bevan, you must have been impressed with Michael Caton's performance, because for me, he's not in a huge amount of scenes, but the scenes that he does, it is absolutely heartbreaking, but the relationship between him and Julie is just, oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, look, I'm impressed with Michael. Yeah, Michael's a national treasure. And he's extraordinary in the role. It was important to, once again, because we had given him the condition in the pact, if he was going to come back, we had to be true to that and show him with the same condition developed somewhat further. It's all well researched. It's all based upon real experiences of people who have dealt with this very sad issue with relatives. You know, the guilt of how much time do you spend with them? You know, often with medical people saying, you know, the only person you're doing a service, you're doing no service to them, and you're doing a disservice to yourself being here all the time. You know, it's not, you know, the guilt of not visiting as much because because there doesn't sort of seem to be any point to it. All those sorts of things that so many people who have people in that situation have to deal with. I think we deal with it. Michael's performance is, I think, as you say, is absolutely brilliant. And I think it's a really, and we didn't have him in a huge amount of the storytelling. I mean, he's there and it's a very solid story, but it is very sad story. But by the same token too, there's charm and whimsy in it as well, because Michael is a natural comedian. And I think at times we laugh with the condition and laugh with Ted. Certainly never would want to in his condition laugh at him, but laugh with him. And the charm that can be found in almost innocence sometimes comes with where that at times that condition can take people in any given moment. You know, the faux pas that can be made by the person, you know, in this PC world, you know, the faux pas that can be made by the person with his sort of condition. You know, I think it's a really lovely story and one of the great strengths of the 6 hours. I'm glad you were moved by it.
Oh, it was beautiful. There was always going to be new characters in the show, of course. Libby Tanner is part of the cast this season. She, of course, worked with Eric on All Saints. Love Libby. She's such an authentic actress. That's the only word that I can really use. I guess, are you a fan of Libby's work? It was great to have her part of this cast.
Oh, Libby's fantastic. She worked with Eric and I on a serial called Pacific Drive.
Oh, I remember that, late night on Channel 9.
Yeah. And she then was in All Saints, and then she was one of the leads in my show Headland, which is now showing on 7 plus in their lineup there. So Lib and I have done quite a bit of work together, and she's wonderful. And she's fantastic in the role of Tessa. You know, we wanted to create a friend for Julie in this country town, and somebody different than Julie's friend in the city, Donna. Libby's come in and done a wonderful job with it. I have great admiration for her. Yeah.
And just a quick question to, I guess, tick off. It's now called Back to the Rafters instead of Pack to the Rafters. Is that just to distinguish itself that it's on Amazon now, or that just that a number of years have passed and this is a slightly, you know, different show?
Oh, look, when, you know, I just didn't think that when we were coming back to it, we could call it Back to the Rafters again, because it is a different beast. It is about the Rafters family, but it is Back to the Rafters was that show about the Rafters. This is about the Rafters, and we thought I've always felt it had to have a title change to really say this is, you know, something, a revisiting. And it just sort of seemed, because of Pact and Back rhyming with Pack, mm-hmm. I don't know, Back to the Rafters sounded like really natural. And we could have called it another round with the Rafters or something like that. And I just don't think it would have, you know, brought up images. I think when you say Back to the Rafters, it you get the best of both worlds. It says it's a new show, but because of that rhyming of Back with Pact, it really feels you're conflating the two together. You know what I mean? So it just seemed to be a God-given title for this new piece, but I was always convinced it had to have a new title in some way, shape or form to separate it out, because it is a different beast. It's the same world, it's the same people, it's the same tone, but it's 6 years later, and just as the world has changed in 6 years, I think the Rafters has changed in 6 years, and I think that needs to be reflected.
I think it keeps the two titles between two worlds, perhaps. That was a pun.
Yeah. Oh, that's a title for a show.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So are you able to tell us a little bit about how the whole Amazon thing came about? Clearly it's not on Seven now, it's on Amazon. Did you approach Amazon, or how did the whole thing come about creating Back to the Rafters?
They came up, I think they were looking to get a footprint in the Australian marketplace, Amazon Prime Video, and they saw that this had been a very successful Australian franchise. They approached Seven. It was their idea to consider some form of revisiting of the Rafter family. They approached Seven. Discussions took place, and then I was approached. I wasn't initially enthusiastic because I just wasn't sure. I just didn't want to revisit in a sort of like a pragmatic, desultory way. But but there was such enthusiasm from them to see maybe it for have an incarnation on this their platform. And so then I found this breakthrough of a story I really wanted to tell, that I could tell because I write best when I come from a very personal place, and to tell this story that was very strong, you know, to my emotional experience and translate it through Dave and Julie, and then explore then different stories with the kids and even Ted's story with the dementia, tell truths about the experiences that a number of my friends are going through with their parents with that condition. I saw there were truths to tell. I also felt as well, this is personal as distinct from, you know, Amazon's imperative, which was a true desire to resurrect a national icon and embrace it for their platform and for international viewers as well. Mm. But I also felt that, I suddenly stopped seeing finished business and saw unfinished business. And I thought that we needed a really life optimistic show in these times, because a lot of drama now which I watch and enjoy thoroughly, but it can be quite life pessimistic in a lot of its tones and a lot of its storytelling. Not criticizing it, because I love watching a lot of those life pessimistic shows, but there are quite a lot of harsh life pessimistic shows out there. Mm. And I suddenly felt maybe it would be nice to revisit the Rafters and channel a bit of life optimism from myself through them, and then, you know, marry that feeling to the very strong feeling that Amazon Prime Video had regarding what they wanted for their platform.
I know many people will ask this. I'm not sure whether there's an answer yet. Is this a limited series, or is there talks, if this does well, that we're going back to the Rafters again?
Oh, you know, be nice. There's nothing has been said upon or agreed upon at the moment. I guess it will depend upon what the reaction to it is. I mean, initial reaction, I mean, it was lovely to hear what you had to say about the first three episodes. We're getting some great initial feedback. You know, you never say never, but that pragmatic decision about any future, I guess, will depend upon pragmatic results in the now. So we wait and we see. All I know is that we've made a show we're very proud of, and we're very pleased with the initial responses that we're getting. Sure. And hope that they're indicative of the general responses overall that we get. I mean, I'm sure there will still be some people who love the show and, you know, might feel, I don't know, in some way, shape or form, we haven't hit the mark with it. But I personally feel that we really have, and I'm glad that from what you say, you feel that we've sort of, you know, got ourselves in the ballpark there.
All right. Well, finally, I just wanted to ask, you know, this is somewhat of a reboot, I guess. The Americans are absolutely loving the reboots over the last couple of years. What are your thoughts about reboots and remakes? Because I guess I wanted to ask what the special ingredient is, because some of them seem to bring back the same cast and it works, and then sometimes it doesn't work, and then on other times they make a whole new version with a new cast that works or it doesn't work. So what is it, do you think, that is that special ingredients that makes a reboot actually work, and why some just completely fail?
I can't speak for other people's shows. I just know that I don't think this could have succeeded, which I think it will, if everyone hadn't come back to it with love and passion and a feeling that there was a point to being back together again, other than just getting back together to, I don't know, make money or, I don't know, whatever. We all came back together again. The whole cast were enthusiastic to come back. And once I found the story I wanted to tell, I was really G'd up, and, you know, Chris Martin Jones returned as producer and the directors came back in, and the passion, the true passion to feel that there is something further, not to repeat, there is something further worth saying about these people that is going to give something more to the people who have previously loved them, or in fact give something to people who've never experienced them before, in terms of, like, for example, an international audience. I think the ones that haven't worked, I suspect, are the ones where there was nothing further to say. It was just like going back into the same old field and wandering around and picking up the stalks of the wheat that you'd already harvested. Mm. You know, whereas I think we've grown a whole new crop. And that, I think, all the ones that I think have succeeded go and grow a whole new crop. They don't go and try and dig out, you know, dig up soil from a field that's well and truly played out. Mm. That's just my theory. I don't want to disservice other people who've probably come in and worked very, very hard to make their shows. There can also be a cynical reason. There was no cynicism at all from anyone, especially Amazon. The Amazon people were so ebulliently eager to pay honour to a very, very successful franchise by seeing it into a future, and in a future that had a strong international component. Mm. So there was no, there wasn't an ounce of cynicism or calculation. It was just love for the project. And if I hadn't felt that, I couldn't have done it. It's because I felt that, because I felt that glowing out of them when they first approached. That's what made me sort of go away and challenge myself and go, why are you being an old churl here saying you don't think you can find it, and made me find it. So I guess that's it. Passion and the sense that we're furthering the franchise, not just taking it around for another run around the block.
Well, from a viewer point of view, if you enjoyed Back to the Rafters, you will enjoy Back to the Rafters. And the main reason is I thought that the heart of Back to the Rafters was the authenticity of that family, and just seeing them again. And there are new storylines and a whole, a slightly different cast with some people, but the authenticity of that family and their love for each other just shines through again, and you just fall in love all over again. So it's absolutely amazing. Bevan, thank you so much for your time. I do have Eric standing by, but I do thank you for your time and for bringing the magic of the Rafters back to our screens. What a legend. Thank you very much.
Thanks for loving the magic. It's very rewarding to hear you say the things you just said. Thank you.
Bevan Lee, creator and writer of Back to the Rafters, which again is coming up on September 17th on Amazon Prime Video.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And yes, now to Eric Thompson. He may have been born in Scotland and emigrated and lived in New Zealand for a couple of decades, but like we do with the best of the best New Zealand actors, we claim them as our own. Dave Rafter himself, Eric Thompson, is here now, and thanks for joining me today.
Nice to speak to you.
Well, the last few years worldwide in television has been an era of reboots. Some screen success and others have been complete disasters. Were you hesitant at all about going back to the Rafters? That is a lot of magic back in the hearts of many Australians.
Yeah, obviously... A little bit hesitant. There'd been a few attempts since we finished to get us back together, but I think they were trying to get us back, and they would say, we'll do a mini series or we'll do like a telly movie. But then it would always say, well, how about we just make another 13 or episodes? We're going, no, that's the old series. So I think there was availability issues all the way through too. So when finally the final package came through, which was the six eps with Amazon Prime, everyone was available, and Bevan was back on board, I just went, okay, we're kind of back with the people who started it out, and if we're ever going to do this, now's the best time to do it. And a little bit nervous to see how it'll be appreciated, but too late now, I guess.
I mentioned in my interview with Bevan that it appears that like no time has even passed when you watch the episodes. Yeah, sure, characters were doing different things in their life, but the magic and the spirit of the Rafters family unit was so much alive. Did it feel the same reuniting with Rebecca, Hugh, Michael and Angus?
Yeah, well, firstly, I'm glad to hear you say that. Certainly, it's good to get that kind of feedback. And reuniting, I mean, we spent 122 episodes. We spent a huge amount of time together, and throughout that time we all experienced aspects of each other's lives. I mean, Rebecca had a baby, we had a baby when we started, and then we had another one 3 years into it, so we were kind of, our lives were kind of enmeshed from that point onwards. So, and we've obviously kept in touch over the years, so walking back on set and looking back at these very, very familiar faces, very familiar energies with people that you know so well, that chemistry and that respect and understanding is still there. And I think I think to begin with, that was what we had at the very, very beginning of the whole show, of Pack to the Rafters, was we had a kind of instant rapport. And if anything, that's just grown over the years.
Bevan mentioned that Dave and Julie are at a moment in their relationship where they may possibly want different things. In simple terms, I think it's fair to say Dave is looking to chapter two of his life, as most of the kids aside from Ruby are obviously older and doing their own thing, and Julie wants to stay in chapter one. Do you think the audience might have more empathy towards Dave or Julie?
Look, it's hard to tell. A couple of scenes have already gone out in social media, and it's interesting seeing the some of the comments, because Rebecca Gibney is so popular and so loved and has a way of kind of creating empathy for her character so beautifully that I wouldn't be surprised if even if people disagreed with what she was doing, they would agree with her. We had a few occasions doing Rafters where we wanted to have an even kind of spread so that the discussion was an evenly spread discussion. But most of the time people erred on her side of the argument. So I think it'll depend who you talk to. But I think, and I'm fully prepared for people marching up to me in the supermarket and going, you should just go back to the children, you should do. kind of expecting that. But at the same time, I think it's a very, very true representation of a moment that probably all couples that have been together for a long time have, is they have to check in and wonder, are they still on the same page? And what does their future, what does the remaining time of their life look like, and how they want to play that card? So whatever happens with allegiances, I think that we have a really robust discussion in this series, and I'm very much looking forward and a little bit apprehensive as to the feedback that we might get.
I think it's going to be great. But you said earlier about there was hints that maybe we might get back together for Rafters and stuff like that. But how out of the blue was this particular phone call? I'm just interested in how a phone call like this happens. Does someone literally get on the phone to you saying, Eric, we're thinking about doing new Rafters with Amazon. Do you want in? Is that how it works?
In a nutshell, I suppose it does. I mean, my first thing was, because like I said, it had happened a few times before. And my questions were, well, is everyone on board? When is this going to happen, and how real is this approach? In this case, whenever I asked those questions, there was a solid answer. And I just went, so this is actually going to happen. Yep. And then the contract arrives and, the negotiations kind of happen, and it's kind of all happening, and all the time I'm expecting something to go wrong, someone to pull out, or some situation to happen. But it just kept on marching forward, and the next minute we're in a read through and looking at each other, going, "Wow, now we've got to make it." But to begin with, it just does start with that phone call. But like I said, it's like trying to, everyone was busy and everyone was doing their own thing. So to get us all available and all interested and ready to go was quite a feat of management from Julie McGoran and Chris Martin-Jones, everyone at Seven Studios.
Well, for either storytelling reasons or because the actor or actress was not available due to other commitments, some of the key recurring characters were unable to return. Is there anyone especially that you missed at this? Because I guess you could call it a reunion.
Oh, look, everyone. I mean, obviously, Ryan, Core, Brooke, Satchel, people who had played a big part in the latter stages of Rafters. But I suppose, the decision was we had six episodes. We were focusing in on the tight Rafters unit. We also, getting those two together as well probably pushed it one step too far in getting us all back together. But I think it was realistically that we needed to really focus on the Rafters, focus on mum, dad and the kids and whatever life was there. The Ryan's character was fantastic and his storyline was always brilliant. But it was when you were shooting 22 episodes a year, having those other story strands were always important to keep the variety up, and especially when you've got an actor of Ryan's standard. So The decision was made early that we just, yeah, we just focused solidly on the Rafter family, and I think it was the correct decision.
Absolutely. Must have been a double shot reunion for you, though, with reuniting with All Saints actress Libby Tanner. She's awesome on the new Rafters playing Tessa. Was it nice working together again with Libby?
Yeah, look, Libby and I, we started our career, well, I started my career in Australia together on a show called Pacific Drive up on the Gold Coast back in 95. She was in that, and we worked together for 2 years on that, then obviously 4 years on All Saints. We used to share a house together in Sydney. She's a very, very, very dear friend of mine. But we, you know, we don't see much of each other, but when I heard that they'd cast her, I was thrilled to spend a bit of time with her. And, you know, Libby's probably, I think, probably one of the most underrated actors we have in this country. She is consistently brilliant at what she does. There's a truth to her work. And I knew at that point that she would be adding a whole other level to the show. And she certainly did.
Seven Studios is still behind the making of the show, of course, but it is now going out on Amazon Prime Video. Was there any major differences filming a show for Amazon as opposed to with Seven?
Well, there was a lot of differences, full stop, in that we're, you know, when we were shooting it for Seven, we were shooting 60% in studio, 40% in location. We had the studio was next to the Home and Away studio. It was all much more networky. It was all kind of there in the building at Everly in Sydney. This was 100% location. It was the producers, the Amazon side, were all in Los Angeles. So we had at read-throughs, we were having, you know, Zoom read-throughs. People were dialing in, we were getting filmed and microphoned, and it was all a kind of next level international production. And then we would have, you know, Amazon execs coming down and sitting in on set. And, you know, it was just really exciting to have this kind of American energy there on set and this kind of big world. And then, of course, you know, COVID hit and suddenly we all had to go back to the Zoom calls in terms of them on set. And at some points there were live feeds of what we were shooting going back to America so they could keep an eye on us, which was, we had to be a little bit careful because, you know, the Australian sense of humour and some of the, you know, the off the ball discussions, you know, but we worked it out really, really well, but they've been fantastic. And really without Amazon Prime, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be here doing it. So they brought a massive amount of energy and a commitment that brought us all. It was the final kind of power in the magnet, really, to get us all back.
I mentioned at the start of the interview that you were born in Scotland and emigrated to New Zealand. Now, I don't know how I didn't know this, but I didn't know that Rebecca Givney was actually a Kiwi until last week, because we all just call her a, you know, Australian. I actually didn't know that. We, you know, we love to claim Kiwis as our own. I understand that she left New Zealand earlier than yourself, but did you actually know Rebecca as far back as New Zealand growing up?
No, not at all. Now, Rebecca was in Australia firmly before I was. So I think she came over here when she was about 19. She's a couple of years older than I am. And so I didn't come over here until I was 28.
Yeah.
So she'd been in Australia for a solid 10 years and just absolutely having an amazing career. So I, you know, she was as much an icon to me watching her from New Zealand as a whole lot of other New Zealanders know. So, but she grew up in Wellington, and, you know, we've got a lot of, and I, you've studied in Wellington and know it really well. So there's a few places that we have a lot of cultural references that we can rely on. And I think an inbuilt New Zealand kind of psychology, mentality, view of the world that I think is one of the reasons we get on so well, is that we kind of understand each other's foundational, you know, development. And yeah, it's we have a lot of fun with that. Now she's living in Dunedin, and that's where I started my career, at the Fortune Theatre in Dunedin. So there's another overlap.
Oh, wow. I wanted to mention, if I can, your beautiful wife, Caitlin, who was, you've been married for, I'm going by the numbers, about 22 years now, is that right?
22 years, yeah.
So where did you guys meet? Now, I was trying to match your acting work and maybe guess you met through Xena, Warrior Princess, but that was just a guess. How did you guys meet?
Yeah, no, we just that was because Caitlin was in Auckland with me when I was working over there, and she scored a role. But we met in 1997 grand final day at the Dogs Bar in Melbourne when when Adelaide Crows were playing the St Kilda, and neither of us were into football, but the people I was staying with were mutual friends. And St Kilda hadn't been in the grand final since 1966 or something. So Caitlin and I sat together and we just started talking, and the game was happening in the background and St Kilda were losing. But we were getting to know each other. And so we just met through mutual friends. And then, we managed to kind of sync our lives up, which is often very difficult for actors. But we managed to do it for a couple of years and long enough for us to take it to the next level and get married. And and then we obviously we worked together on the Alice a few years later after she'd done All Was Greener, just because Posey Graham Evans at Nine just really liked her and liked us, and she called us up and she just called me and Caitlin up and how would you guys feel about working together, and we thought it would be great, so we gave that a shot too. So it's been a nice journey.
Well, let me ask you about the Alice and working together. Working together, married together, is that a good combination? Because I know for some couples, they might that sounds like probably a disaster for them.
we were a bit concerned that we wouldn't have any chemistry on screen. That would be a little bit embarrassing. It worked. It worked really well, simply because we didn't have kids at the time. Our cattle dog Russ was in it with us as well, which was great because we didn't know what to do with him while we were flying back and forth to Alice Springs. So he would just come with us and be in the TV show. Having an opportunity to, it was such an adventure because we went off and we were shooting up in the Red Center and we were getting to know a lot about the land, and I was getting a peek into the, behind the kind of East Coast understanding of what Australia was, and understanding Australia much more holistically. And we were just having an amazing time. We went up in a hot air balloon one morning as part of the shoot, and she managed to get on as the boom swinger because it was only crew and cast, but she wasn't in the cast in that scene. So the first AD said, you hold that and you can record the sound and you can go up. And we did a dawn, we were sprinkling ashes as part of a storyline, and Caitlin was the boom swinger, and I was working with Jessica Napier, and there we were soaring above the Red Center, watching big red kangaroos bouncing around. It was a pretty magical moment. So we had all those kind of experiences together. So any little logistical niggles that we might have experienced were sort of paled in significance.
And since there's a love for reboots these days, one of my favourite shows that absolutely left us before its time was a show that you've just mentioned, and that was Always Greener, starring the lovely Caitlin McDougall. Any chance that you could ask her to make some calls to see who might be interested in that one? That'd be great having that show back.
Well, it would be great, and I it was, that was a sad kind of moment because we had... I think David Leckie came on board at Seven, and they made some pretty strange, decisions. And I think they very much regretted it. That was another Bevan Lee show.
Yeah.
And in some ways, this iteration of Back to the Rafters draws on that because we have the city-country family split that we had in Always Greener.
Yeah.
And in many ways, what Dave's going through and Julie are going through is kind of the kind of things that John Harrod and Ann Tenney went through in that show. So there is actually, quite a lot of Always Greener in this in Back to the Rafters. Rafters came after Always Greener, and I think because Bevan was so disappointed about Always Greener that I think he funneled that in. So the actors in that production are still around. I think it would be wonderful. It was a great show, and it was one of those just terrible network decisions, if I can be so bold, to cut it off in its prime because it was doing so well.
Yeah, absolutely. Always Greener, we'd love to have that one back as well. Many actors that have had such an extensive career across many shows, films, are always, a particular role is often fondly remembered by people. With yourself, though, it's a bit different. It could be Dave Rafter, but it could also be George Turner, or it could be Mitch Stevens. So does most of the recognition come from Rafters or 800 Words or All Saints or maybe something else?
Look, it kind of depends, you know, like it depends. It's surprising occasionally. We've got a, funnily enough, All Saints was a very, very popular show in Iran. And every few years they replay it all. I guess they've censored it, or they just have it, you know, sitting in their cupboard. They dust it off every few years. So I've got a huge amount of people in Iran that love Mitch Stevens, and little do they know that I'm now, you know, 20 years older than Mitch Stevens. They're usually very disappointed when they see my recent photographs, but there's a, so I'm kind of, that thing is still around, and obviously Rafters is massive. But then Always Greener, 800 Words, was a much loved show as well. So it probably spreads evenly among the three. I've count myself really, really lucky and very, very grateful to have three great shows, three very successful shows that I was involved in, still being fondly remembered. So I don't really mind. You know, most of the time I'm quite happy that no one recognizes me at all. But if they do, whatever comes out of their mouth, I'm proud of each of those shows.
So how was doing Aftertaste then for the ABC? Because that was certainly not a Dave Rafter or Mitch Stevens kind of role.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I did it, because I've done that. I've done Dave Rafter, Mitch Stevens, George Turner. You know, they're all kind of the same kind of guy, you know, and I wanted to do something different. That's really, you know, very important to reinvigorate myself and keep, you know, keep myself active and focused on continuing to explore, you know, this world. But yeah, no, it was a huge amount of fun, and that was the whole point behind it, to do something so out of the ordinary. And I know I probably alienated a few of the more conservative fans of me previously, but I kind of felt that I'd earned that, because I'd done so much in that zone that I was probably more doing it for myself than for anyone else, to make sure that I was being really satisfied and not really thinking of the audience is going to, you know, find this a little bit, you know, confrontational seeing me so, you know, aggressive and a bit rude. So I just went for it, and, you know, I was really, really glad with how it turned out.
All right. So second last question, just about maybe some of the work that you've got coming up. I know you've got a new film, How to Please a Woman. I mean, that's got a massive cast in it too. Miles Pollard, Roz Hammond, Cameron Daddo, Tasman Walton. So what's coming up for you? And
Well, that we shot that film in Perth in Fremantle in April, and so that's going to be coming out toward the end of the year or early next year. I've got a couple of other things that are locked in, but, you know, like a lot of productions these days, they really make you sign non-disclosure kind of clauses so tightly that if I told you what was going on, a drone would come down and pick me up and take me off somewhere. I don't know. But yeah, there's a couple of things happening, and I've got a film that I did a couple of years ago called Coming Home in the Dark, which is a, you know, psychological thriller that I made that's in theatres at the moment in Australia, but not many, because most of Australia, well, the big side of Australia is all shut. So it's in Perth and Adelaide and Brisbane and Hobart. And I've been lucky. I've managed to work through the pandemic and a few things circling around. So you'll hear all about them in due course, I'm sure.
Well, finally, Eric, the big three shows we've talked about, All Saints, 800 Words and Rafters, you've been nominated for the Silver Logie for Most Popular Actor and won it for All Saints and 800 Words, but strange enough, not for Rafters. So when the next Logies happen, who knows when that's going to happen? Do you think there's a chance, a golden chance to claim the missing Logie for Rafters?
I'll give you two words that'll sum up why that probably will never happen, and that's Hugh Sheridan. Hugh was massively popular in Rafters, and I think, you know, he's still.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And so, you know, we were always nominated. Hugh always won the award. And I'm you're lucky enough to get one of those things. I've kind of realized just how difficult it is to get them. I've managed to get a couple. And so, you know, I'm not sort of as motivated. I think the Logie Awards are, you know, problematic these days with streaming shows and with digital, you know, voting and stuff. It's sort of, it's a little bit different than back in the day. We had to rip the voucher out of the magazine and send it off. So, and they've been cancelled 2 years in a row. So, yeah, very, very much hoping, you know, but now that we've got so many shows on streaming platforms, we'll start seeing more of them and involved in the Logies. So you never know. I mean, but like I said, I'm not really motivated by it. And Hugh's the fly in that ointment.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Eric, thank you so much for your time. And thank you for sharing a little bit about Caitlin as well. We'd love to see her back on the box soon too. But good luck with Back to the Rafters. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Cheers.
That was Eric Thompson from Back to the Rafters, and pretty much on all your favourite Australian shows over the years. So many and so great to chat. And also thanks to creator and writer Bevan Lee, who stopped by for a chat as well. Back to the Rafters is dropping September 17th on Amazon Prime Video. Amazon has a 30-day free trial, and then thereafter it's just $6.99 per month. Not much higher than one coffee a month, really. Good value. That's it for this edition of the TV Black Box 101 podcast. For the latest television news and exclusives, head to tvblackbox.com.au. Until next time, I'm Aaron Ryan. Bye for now.